हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवत्सरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय रघुनाथ जी।
हरे कृष्ण महाराज भी सकते मैं
हरि
हरे
वाह
कृष्ण
हरि वाह
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवायम ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो गौधीराय। We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 2, text number 14. Tasmat ekena manasa bhagavan sattvatam patih shrotavya kirtitavyascha dhyeyah pujyascha nityada. Therefore, with one-pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of devotees. Purport. If realization of the absolute truth is the ultimate aim of life, it must be carried out by all means. In any one of the above mentioned castes and orders of life, the four processes, namely glorifying, hearing, remembering, and worshipping, are generally occasions. Without these principles of life, no one can exist. Activities of the living being involve engagements in these four different principles of life. Especially in modern society, all activities are more or less depend on hearing and glorifying. Any man from any social status became a well-known man in human society within a very short time if he is simply glorified truly or falsely in the daily newspapers. Sometimes political leaders of a particular party are also advertised by newspaper propaganda, and by such method of glorifying, an insignificant man becomes an important man within no time. But such propaganda by false glorification of an unqualified person cannot bring about any good, either for the particular man or for the society. There may be some temporary reactions to such propaganda, but there are no permanent ones. Therefore, such activities are a waste of time. The actual object of glorification is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has created everything manifested before us. We have broadly discussed this fact from the beginning of the Janmadi Asya Shloka of this Srimad Bhagavata. The tendency to glorify others or hear others must be turned to the real object of glorification, the Supreme Being, and that will bring happiness. The end of the purport.
Okay, thank you. Yes, so then Srila Prabhupada's pointing out here that as the purpose of human life is to become self-realized, realize your relationship with Krishna and go back to Godhead. That's the actual purpose why the material world has been created, to give the living entities a choice. And so then, and to bring themselves to that point of choosing appropriately and going back to Godhead, to their natural position. So, he's pointing out that under all, you know, as in the Chaturshloki, it will say later, that under, in all times, all places, all circumstances, you should try to always be absorbed in the Supreme Lord, right here. And then these four points are being given: your hearing about the Lord, glorifying the Lord, remembering the Lord, and worshiping the Lord. So this is then the essential point that's there, because, and Prabhupada's pointing out, as one could see, is, oh, but why that? Why not something else? Why not some yoga or this or that? But we see in human society, then there's always these things are going on. You're hearing about someone who's great or that, then you're glorifying, you're remembering. You know, if there's opportunity, there may be shows of signs of respect and everything like that. All these aspects are going on anyway. People are looking for that. That's why you have such a thing as celebrities, because those are persons who are prominent, who people hear, chant, remember, and worship, right? So people are looking for this. So Prabhupada's pointing out here is that therefore then one should do these things oneself, you know, with determination in connection with the Lord, and at all times, all places, all circumstances, one should be trying to be engaged in these activities, because these are the real activities of the soul. Spiritual world, this is what's going on all the time, and Krishna's reciprocating. And in the material world, because the soul, you're dealing with the same soul that's here. It's not that these are different souls. It's just that here the souls become conditioned, you know, are covered by the material energy, so they identify with it. So they do their stuff that they would as a soul anyway. Just now they do it in a distorted and perverted fashion. So instead of it being about Krishna as the center, it's ourself as the center. But still, we want to hear, glorify, remember, and worship, you know, individuals or groups. That's what we still want to do that. That's the natural thing. So it's being pointed out is that by doing those things here with mundane consciousness, then there's always going to be the weakness that the soul won't be satisfied, because you're dealing with the material energy. So therefore, you're going to get the effects are still going to be material. There's not going to be any satisfaction for the soul. So the soul can only actually be satisfied in doing these four activities in relationship to the Supreme Lord, right? So that way then, you know, it's being recommended. And if you do that, then you will get the benefit. Others may not appreciate, may not do, but they're still doing the same thing. You know, just like Prabhupada points out in the social platform from the previous verse, that the Varnashram system is the human system of organization. So whether it's done scientifically, you know, with knowledge, science means that I know the theory, I know the art, and I use the two together. In other words, I do the practical application according to the theory. That's called science. If I'm just applying myself, you know, I'm doing something, observing, doing again, seeing which works and which goes in the right direction, I keep doing. What goes the wrong direction, I try to change it until I find something works, and like that. You know, like that. The experimental aspect. Or I just observe things and I make all kinds of philosophies about it, what it should be, like these modern social, you know, and economic ideologies and all. That's from observation and what, you know, would be nice. But they've never have been or been applied or can be, because they're just ideologies. And then there's practical people who are doing something, but it tends to be a bit hit or miss. You know, they start to notice some stuff and start to put together something, but it's that they don't actually understand the basis of what it is that they're working with. So the same in the social systems. The Varnashram, they've noticed that these kind of divisions are standard, but because they don't know the theory of it, they don't actually know what goes with what actually is there and how they relate together, what's the relationship, what they're supposed to do. So they just do some things. They see, okay, these things work in business, or these things work in education, or these things. But then at the same time, because it's only theory for them, then because of the aspect of the ideologies, then they'll adjust it. And so it never becomes scientific. It's either experimental or theoretical. And that theory is based on what they've observed, and that rather than what is the descending knowledge coming from the scriptures. So in the same way is that, you have the society, but it's not very scientific, in the same way as the living entity is going about hearing, chanting, remembering, and worshiping, but it's not very scientific. They don't actually understand how to do these things. So the soul will always be the soul. The material world is always Krishna's energy. So we're always a part and parcel of Krishna. Material energy is always his energy, controlled by him. Both are controlled by him. So they're always going to act according to the natural principles that is inherent in them. But due to ignorance, then it becomes, perverted and distorted and all these things. So one can't properly see what are the principles at work like that. Like if you explain to someone how everyone serves, the parents serve the children, the parents, husband, the wife, the husband, the family, the community, family, the families and communities, the nation, like that. Everything is always service. You want something to go right, you have to serve. That's just how it works. And you always see as the bad guy is the guy who won't serve. He's too proud. He just wants to control and enjoy, and he doesn't serve. And so he always goes down like that. So the guy who's willing to serve, he always wins. Right? So if you, that people will agree, but they never think that that's in the inherent nature of the soul. Therefore, they have to serve. And then as they're serving, all these other things, since the soul is eternal and everything else around them is temporary, then why not apply the serving element, which is, an inherent nature of the eternal soul, towards the absolute eternal? Function on the eternal platform. So we're eternals, but there's the supreme eternal, right? Who's controlling all the other eternals. And so then you can see that. So that's scientific, but people don't take it that far. And so that's what we're pointing out to people. We're pointing out the science of Krishna consciousness. We're not pointing out how bad their society is, or just, we're great and all that. So it's sentimental. We give a scientific presentation, and that means, in other words, what's the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and how it practically applies in your life and in the world around you. And so then people can see from their position who they are. It brings them out of ignorance. They know what to do, what's the proper abhidhaya, and what's the proper goal. And then they can function, they can move forward. But otherwise, then it may be sentimental, their approach, or we're too worried to not say to them what actually is going on, and that, and so then they never really learn about Krishna or who they are as a living entity, and so these kind of things then don't really benefit like that. How you say? Yeah. So we're trying to, present. That's the whole point. Is Srimad Bhagavatam is a scientific presentation of Krishna consciousness, right? So all of the shastras are all scientific. Now it's just a matter of the medium by which they're written. It means what kind of kavya is there? What kind of aspect? If it's more poetic, like that, so you'll have the science, but more poetically presented, like you will in the Bhagavatam, or Gita, or Chaitanya Charitamrita, or you'll get in the Vedanta Sutra, Upanishads. That'll be more how you say, how it's analytically presented, its focus is on that aspect, like that. And so, or let's say in the story form, so it's more of a pleasant way of interacting, making it practical and showing things around you. So the scriptures have these basic ways that they are presented. And so but they're all presenting the science of Krishna consciousness. That's what's there. So it's not that, oh, this is sentimental or it's not practical or that. No, this is the only practical stuff. That's like, you know, most people will say, let's say you buy a machine, you know, some, you know, more complicated machine. It comes with this big manual, right? But most people don't look at the manual. They just kind of use their, you know, previous experience or just their experience now to make it work. Like, let's say you have a computer and you have an 8-year-old kid. The 8-year-old kid is not reading the manual. He just starts pushing buttons and he sees what they do. And because he's enthusiastic, then he starts seeing the patterns. And after a while, you see he's better at it than most adults. Right? But that was by art. That wasn't by theory. Right? So that's the point is that people are just, they're just nowadays, basically what you have are artists. Then you have some academics like that that are, you know, more theoretical and like that, and they live in that kind of world, but they're not very practical, right? They observe things, they do some experiments on the things, but they can't apply it in a real world situation. So that's what's the glory of Krishna consciousness, is that since it's Krishna's world, it's his laws, so we know the theory comes from that. And we're given the whole system on how you apply it. What's the culture? What's the tradition? So, you know, what is the various things to use? And then the art of doing it. That's why the Puranas are so important, because we see how great personalities in the past have applied, you know, this theory, you know, applied the science, you know, by applying the theory in this form as art. And so we see how they did it and what results they got. And so like that, then we're able to practically use it ourselves. So it's a perfect system. It's perfectly given, right? Previous ages, you know, Puranas are there, but just by the analytical aspects of the Upanishads, they could analyze it and start to think of the very situations to apply it into. And then in Manana, you know, that's the Shravana, then the Manana, they would apply it. And then they would analyze that and then move it forward, you know, according to what has been delineated until they get the proper realization like that. But in the Kali Yuga, we have that, but it's supported by the Puranas, which give the histories of people who they themselves thinking these things have applied or not thinking. Let's say like Duryodhana doesn't think, not on this level. He just applies the niti and tries to get his result. And then we see what happens, right? So we see is it didn't work out for him, and it worked out for Maharaj Yudhishthir, right? Because it's Krishna's world. What's correct will happen. It's just a matter of time. His living entity has free will. So they're given the opportunity that they can misapply their free will, but at some point it must be brought back to the correct place. Like says Krishna comes again and again, you know, age after age, to get rid of, you know, what's going against the laws of nature and to establish what is in line with the laws of nature. But it just takes time. There's a time given for people to be, you know, distracted, and then at some point it goes back to what it should be. Yes, Raghunachi.
Krishna Maharaj, I want to ask you, in the purport there is the explained the tendency of glorified others and or here others must be turned to the real object of glorification, the Supreme Being, and that will bring happiness. I have the question, I have the experience that many devotees, after some time, they lost the taste for the hearing, I don't know, Prabhupada's books, because they know everything, they remember that there is many things, And many times happen that they start to hearing the material things because they are not more interesting. It means that they was not discover this happiness from this hearing, or what is the meaning of this?
Oh, it means that they're that situation. It means that they never came to the point of stableness in Krishna consciousness. They never came to Nishta. Or if they were on the platform Nishta, something happened that they got distracted from that position. Because basically is that everything in Krishna consciousness that you're experiencing, then you're getting some taste from that. And it's because of that, that you're giving up the material elements and taking to the spiritual, right? You know, that's what's going on. So, but, you know, like you mentioned in the beginning, what's new is fresh, you know, in your mind, it's always new and fresh. You know, even those who've been doing it for eternity, it's still new and fresh. But because of being the aspect of the neophyte, the weaknesses, the prakriti bhakta, they're more attached to the material than the spiritual, right? With the madhyama, they're more attached to the spiritual than the material, right? And under the uttama, it's only spiritual. There's no question of material. So then because they have those things, then they're looking at it still from these material platforms. Like you see those who come to Krishna consciousness, the four kinds of persons who surrender, right? So there's going to be the one, the Artha, Artarthi, Jigyasu, and Jnani. So generally speaking, in this example you're giving, you're not talking about the Jnani, right? Jnani here doesn't mean Jnani like in Jnani meaning the intellectual. Because many devotees will, because they were, you know, more intellectual in their approach, they will then consider they were a Jnani of these four. But the Jnani means he knows the Lord, sees what the Lord is doing for him, and therefore surrenders. You know, a very good example would be someone from a, you know, born into a devotional family. You know, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that they're Samanya Bhaktas, or general devotees, or ordinary devotees. And you have sampradayak, or what you could say is, you know, properly situated. So those born in these, you know, good Brahmin families or devotee families, or, you know, just around people like that, that they're always exposed to, then they're seeing Krishna consciousness going around them. So at some point, if they think, you know, Krishna's taking care and all this and that, and so therefore I want to surrender. That's the jnani. In other words, with knowledge, he surrenders. That's the difference, because you're thinking, no, I'm a jnani, I am an intellectual. No, this is not about being intellectual. This is about in knowledge you surrender. Because otherwise, the Artha, Artarthi, and Jigyasu, it's not with knowledge that they're surrendering. They have a disturbance, emotional disturbance, or, you know, disturbance with the facilities, the circumstances they're in, or it's more of an intellectual kind of aspect of just they want to know and this and that, but they don't know. So all of those three are in ignorance. So in the fourth is the jnani, because he is in knowledge, and so therefore he makes that determined effort. So now he takes up seriously, because you see many times, you know, those who are born in devotee families, they may or may not be very serious about Krishna consciousness. They know about Krishna, they take part in that, they're happy to do. You know, they're just like a little, you know, on a better platform, let's say, than your average, you know, kind of practicing Hindu. Same kind of thing, because they're maybe mixed with all the Panchopasana. So they, you know, how you say, celebrate every festival of every deity and everything like that, every demigod. Or they might be more Vaishnav like that, where they're more focused on Krishna or Rama or Vishnu. But, you know, they're not that serious. They're more serious about their, you know, occupational duties and the benefits and the family and you know, taking care of all those kind of things. So at some point when they see us, oh, no, but Krishna's taking care, I should surrender to him and become, then they develop Shraddha, right? That then moves them forward. Then now when they take up and become Bhajana Kriya, you know, so it's more steady, they take up that the Sadhu Sangha seriously in Bhajana Kriya, then you can say is now they're, you know, Sampradayak, right? But at the same time, is you still have to get through Anartha Nivritti, because Anartha Nivritti means you still think that material things are more important or equally as important, right? But Nishtha means you know nothing else other than devotional service and chanting the holy name of the, like a message here, hearing, chanting, hearing, glorifying, remembering, and worshiping the Supreme Lord. When you say that is the only process and everything else has to be dovetailed in line with this, that's the platform of Nishtha. So you can see here is what's happened is they're not on that platform. They don't have that faith. They have faith, but their faith is Kamal Shraddha. It's delicate, you know. It's like a lotus. Lotus is very delicate, the petals, you know, like that. It's very, you know, like that. So then, but then we see Dridha Shraddha. That means it's firm faith. That's the symptom of someone on the platform, Nishtha. Because the predominance of anarthas are gone, right? Prabhupada mentions 75%. You know, that situates you nicely in Nishtha. And so then that 75% means, you know, you've conquered most of that by Krishna's grace. So you're able to be fixed. You have faith in the process. And now it's just a matter of time and being steady before you actually get a taste, where you're on the platform of taste. So it's not that the others have lost the taste. They've just forgotten about it. Because it's like the taste is the inspiration, but it's more like, you know, something new, like going to a place you've never been before, going to doing something you've never done before. There's a particular taste in that, you know, going on a vacation, going on a trip, going something. You want to do something new. So they've forgotten what is there. And so that's why it's important association and always keeping in contact with the process, you know, hearing, chanting, following the regulative principles of devotional service. That these will keep the taste there. That will keep the, you know, one will be more in contact with it because you get the taste doing these direct activities. But if you're not doing those direct activities, you get onto the side, then you get more interested in those and getting a taste there. Maya will give you a taste. So it's just a matter of by association, if they can come back into getting more directly involved, then they again, you know, reawaken those, that taste and all that's there. Because devotional service is never lost. It's just, if there's ones, you know, there's just a distraction, you forget. And if you're, you know, very offensive, then it can be covered, right? But it's never actually lost. Because when we say bhakti is eternal, we mean it's eternal. But there might be a million lifetimes between your practice now and when you become serious again. So that's as good as saying it's uprooted. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like that one devotee, you know, so-called intellectual. Then at some point he came to Prabhupada. You know, you see him a lot in the old pictures and that. He was around a lot. You know, quite involved. But one day he came to Prabhupada and said he wanted Prabhupada's blessings that, you know, now he's found some, you know, you know, spiritual master he feels is, you know, can take him farther. He's only gotten as far as he can with Srila Prabhupada. So now with this new guru, he can go farther. You know, some who knows what kind of the detail. So he came for Prabhupada's blessings, says, yes, I give you blessings that for 1 million lifetimes, you won't come across a bona fide spiritual master again. So that means whatever advancement he did will be there, but you won't see it again for 1 million lifetimes. So that's why we're very careful of offenses. We get distracted, that can do something, but you know, very easily it can come back up, either this lifetime or within a few lifetimes. But if you're offensive, then that can put it off for much longer. depending upon how great the offense is. Here, you have the bona fide spiritual master and you get distracted by material energy. That happens. But to reject the bona fide spiritual master for, you know, someone else, that's not going to bode well. You know, especially from what I understand, it was some variety of, you know, one of these Indian swamis, you know, these Haridwar guys, or, you know, some intellectual guy, you know, who could present very nicely philosophy, but, you know, they're not sampradayic. They're both not bona fide. Does that make some sense?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you very much. It's clear.
Okay. Yeah, they just need to be serious about the association of devotees and reading Prabhupada's books, and then that taste that they're looking for will come back. Okay. Then, okay, Tattvaji.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I have a question.
The better half. Okay.
Please accept my humble obeisances, Maharaj.
The less better half. Okay.
So, yeah, I have been, I think, ripening the fruits of being in a battle with other devotees, and I must say I have lost a little bit my taste for the chanting. So could it be that I have done some offense without noticing? But how can we detect, and how do we know if we are being offensive or not?
The point is that being, I mean, of offenses, you know, the kuti, I mean, the anartas, then the first one is kutinaki, or fault finding. All right. And then the second will be that of, you know, offenses to the deity, to the holy name. Then the third will be the, I think, asat trishna, unless it's hriday darbalya, weakness of heart. And then asat trishna is a particular, you know, more specific material taste or desire. And so of them, the one that's the worst is actually kutinati, or fault finding, like that. So, you know, generally, most of the time we see, especially neophytes, they'll take it that the asat trishna, the material taste or desire, is the worst. But actually, it's fault finding is the worst. And so then one has to see is that something is there, and you can see that something is wrong. So then for yourself, you know, don't do that. Do what's correct. Like that. And so, but when you start criticizing those who are doing wrong, and you're not actually in a position to benefit them by, they would take what you're saying seriously, or you're in a position to actually help correct them, then that becomes a problem, right? I think the other day someone was saying about Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions, that maybe Raghunathji was saying, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that if you're, you know, looking at something, analyzing, finding a fault so that you don't get distracted by that, or you're explaining it to others so that they don't get distracted by that, that's not considered offensive, right? But then, you know, so that means we can discriminate. We use the intelligence. We can see what should be done and what should not be done. You know, so we're not criticizing Duryodhana by pointing out that by his, you know, being inimical towards the Pandavas and not being very interested in service to Krishna, and, you know, cultivating or maintaining his material desires, and, you know, directly going after them, he's creating his own problem, and you see it destroyed him, his brothers, and, you know, the whole scene. But it's not a criticism of him, it's criticism of the mentality and what he's doing. Right? And so then from that, then we see, yes, I should be very careful to you know, take advantage of the association of devotees, take seriously worship of Krishna, and not try to specifically cultivate my material desires separate from their use in Krishna's service. Right? So that kind of aspect then is beneficial. But if we're at particularly attacking those individuals, you know, especially personally or things like that, and we're not in a position to actually correct them, that's going to be a problem. Right? Or even let's say you're not doing that, but you're always thinking about how they're wrong and how why they're doing wrong and this and that. But if we're not their authority or a close friend that we can talk to them and have some effect on them, then there's no point in thinking like that. It doesn't actually give any benefit to us or them, because we've analyzed what should be done and what should be avoided, and then we just do that. We don't have to keep thinking about it. Does that make sense? That'll be one thing. It also can be is that you are spending time in the Dham where everything's increased a thousandfold and all that. And so then, you know, and everything around is always about Krishna. And then one, you know, after getting inspired there, one comes back to wherever one's place is somewhere within the material creation. And one may find that it doesn't have the same that same potency. That's the idea of going to the Dham on a regular basis, to become that inspired and seeing what things can be, and then try to take that back with you. So it just might be that few days of feeling the difference between being, you know, surcharged in the Dham and then being, how you say, back in the final land, you know, just before you fall off the edge of the earth. Does that make any sense? Yes, no, microphone's off.
Sorry. Yes, it makes a lot of sense, Maharaj. Thank you.
Yeah. So that's the point. Is Shravana means we hear and we try to remove doubts. So we see what's correct, what's incorrect, this and that. When that's clear, then we can take up the stage of manana, where now we, having contemplated what is to be done and you know, have removed the basic doubts on what is, you know, getting in the way of what we're, you know, to do, then we apply it. And then applying it, then we'll see is that there is, things may work out, things may not, this works, that doesn't work. And analyzing that, then we try again. And that process of analyzing, applying, that's called manana. And then if we keep doing that, then we start to see, you know, we start to see the benefits of it and that and the importance of it. Then we have realization, that's called nididhyasana. And that's where we value it. So in this case, values doesn't mean, oh, this is a good thing to do and that's a bad thing to do. Yeah, my values are, you know, I do this, I'm a good person. And that's not what it's talking about. Value means you realize the position and you can actually live it. It's not a theory. It's not an ideology. So that's why if one uses too much of an inductive approach, then you'll see it as knowledge, skills, and values. But you don't actually understand the dynamics of how it's working. Knowledge means you've removed doubts, so that means you can apply it. Skill is not just the theoretical skill, or, you know, you learn some technical skill, but you're actually trying to apply it because it's important. And then from that being steady, then you value it. So you can see that there's a lot of difference in the Upanishadic approach and then the, you know, the modern inductive method of seeing these three. They just take them as three equal things. You know, I need knowledge, I need skills, and I have values. So values is my culture, like this and that, but they're starting from a theoretical point rather than that, no, I've realized the Vedic values. Because otherwise, until you've realized that you're going to use whatever values you have, so whatever your background is, you know, does that make sense? You know, like, yeah, like that.
Very,
That
very
makes
nice.
sense.
Yes, very much.
Okay.
Thank
Yeah,
you.
so it's just a matter of continuing, you know, like that, and things will move forward.
Thank you.
And if you get bored, then you walk over to the side and grab a handful of snow, push it together into a nice ball, and then throw it at the person who's standing next to you, and then you'll be inspired again.
Oh, yeah. There's less snow now here in Finland.
Less snow. Okay, so then
Yes.
you have to find another way to inspire yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
I heard. Okay, anybody else, question or comment on that?
I would like to make a comment on this thing about the fault-finding mentality. It's something that I
Yes.
know from myself a lot.
Yes.
And one thing is that, you know, whenever whatever we have in the heart, it's growing. You know, when we meditate on something, then we become attached to it. So even if we don't, if we're not directly attached to that mentality, it grows when we're meditating on other people's bad behavior. So we should try to see
Yes.
the good in others. That's the thing about the bee
Yeah.
mentality. So even if we're not
Yes.
committing offenses, if we're all the time thinking about the bad things about others, then that will develop in ourselves. So we should be very
Yes.
careful about that mentality.
Yes. Very good point. It's in that it's always important that you're seeing good means what's good in Krishna for moving forward in Krishna consciousness. Bad means what's not useful in Krishna consciousness. Because that's also one of the symptoms that you develop by material association is this identity of good and bad based on it itself, not in connection with Krishna consciousness. Right? So that's how you get all these, you know, modern ideologies and other things like that, is that they'll say this is good, this is bad, but based on what? They have an idea that something should be good, you know, or something should be bad, based on certain ideologies that they have, something that some experience they've had or something like that. But that's the point. They're making good and bad. So when you see good and bad not in connection with Krishna, it's mundane. And one of the symptoms of though of pure devotional service is they don't make distinctions of good and bad based on that. They see, you know, can the person move forward in Krishna consciousness? Right? Can the situation be engaged in Krishna consciousness? You know, what's good for Krishna? That's how they see. So like that. So when you say being good or avoid being bad, it always has to see as the good and bad has to be based on what is favorable for Krishna's pleasure and what's not. That would be one. And the two is how you say as you develop these things, then I think it's mentioned, I'm not sure. I think it's mentioned by, I think it's Vadiraj. I think he's seventh generation from Ramanujacharya. So he's very well respected. He came and kind of inspired the devotees again in their dedication to Ramanujacharya. And so in one of his books, he's pointing out this, what you're talking about here of fault finding with the devotees, you know, or finding something wrong or like this. And he points out is that, you know, he's making the point that somebody's done something wrong. Okay, so now he got a reaction for doing what's wrong. But now those others are pointing out his fault. But if they're not in the position of authority that they're the person who's going to correct them, or they're not in a position to, it's not being done to help others, but it's just to point out the fault, they take on the result of that. And if someone else is then getting, you know, pointing out their fault like that, then they take on. So in other words, those who criticize you, they take your bad qualities. You know, it's just like, let's say you have, you know, shoes, right? And now if you wear someone else's shoes, you take on their bad qualities, right? Like that. So it's the same thing is you're always thinking about them, contemplating them and criticizing them, pointing out the faults. So you start taking on their, you purify them by your thoughts. And so that's why, you know, when you're saying it cultivates that and you start to develop those qualities, that's how, that's mechanically how it is. You're taking on their bad qualities. You're purifying them. Now, if they continue making the thing, they're going on, you know, continuing staying impure. But, you know, then that means then there's plenty of impurity that you can take on in your fault finding. You don't have to worry that it will run out. But if they're, you know, sincerely trying to improve themselves in Krishna consciousness, then they're just getting purified, right? They're not doing something wrong, or then they'll get purified. So one gets purified in that condition. So that's how it is. That's why you see as someone who's always contemplating on someone else and pointing out the faults, with time takes on those qualities, and then they start doing them. Right? It's a very standard
also mentions
thing.
That.
Who?
Manu also mentions that.
Manu also mentions. Okay, so yeah. then we're getting it from both of those places. Yeah. So that's how it's happening. So in other words, like we mentioned before, because you know, one would say, oh, you can't think anything bad about anybody, but they're only coming in from the angle of the material being good or being bad. But the point is no, we're trying to become Krishna conscious. And in trying to become Krishna conscious, then we have to do what's favorable for Krishna and avoid that which, you know, is not favorable. In other words, what makes us remember Krishna is favorable, what makes us forget is unfavorable. And so if someone's doing something and others are distracted by that or have doubts, then we talk on that and point out what's right about that or what's wrong about that. You know, or what's wrong, what they're doing, what's the correct thing to do, how to apply that into your life, how to avoid the bad in their life. So you're either yourself contemplating, you're benefiting by that, by not following their example. But once you've contemplated and all that, you don't have to worry about it anymore, right? Unless something new comes up or a new angle, and so you're thinking of some more depth of it. But, you know, so either for yourself or for benefiting others, then one can analyze these things. But it's not about the personal thing against them, just like when Prabhupada would be discussing philosophy, you know, or, you know, about personality, he would be attacking the person. He'd be discussing the philosophy. He'd be pointing out the weaknesses in the philosophy. Or, you know, what's the principle in their philosophy that works, but the detail that they're using is not going to work. So you're not directly actually attacking the person. So when you directly attack, that's where you start to get the problem. Or there's no reason you're thinking like that. It's not for your benefit. It's not for their benefit. It's not for someone else's benefit. Then it just becomes prajalpa. Then it's like gossip. So then you have to be careful there. So that's much of the time, you know, what you see going on, you know, in the modern media and all that. They're just, you know, finding this and that. But it's not that there's any solution or anyone's benefited or anything like that. So we're used to that. That's gramya katha. So it's something that we're habituated to. So it's just a matter of figuring out. It's not that seeing what's wrong is not is the problem. You know, why are you fault finding? No, it's a matter of, we're talking about the devotional process. If there's something wrong in the process, that should be pointed out. Now, if it were, you know, pointing it out, that person doesn't want to hear, okay. The person that's doing it doesn't want to hear, okay. But you know what to do, and so then keep it to yourself. You analyze it and all that, because they don't want to hear, and trying to discuss it with them just creates problem. You know, that's going to also address a bit what Mataji asked before, is that you have those who don't want to hear, don't want to see what's wrong and what they're doing, don't want to be corrected, and they're not accepting you know, that you're in a position to point it out or correct them. So then continuing that kind of discussion then basically just takes, it's a waste of time. So that will start to then have an effect on your consciousness. So all you have to, the solution is just don't do that. And continue with the chanting and this and that, because the devotional process is so powerful, it will take you forward. You just have to give up those things that are holding it back. You know, it's like the anchor. The anchor is in, the boat's there, you're rowing the boat and everything. And that, so it's going as far forward as it can, but the anchor is holding it back. So you pull up the anchor and then you move forward. So it's not that, oh no, you have to get off the boat and burn the boat down. And then you have to walk around the world backwards three times. And then, you know, like this. And then, you know, like, no, you just pull up the anchor and go forward. There is nothing material that can stop Krishna consciousness. Doesn't matter how big it is, this or that. It really doesn't matter. That's why there's examples of Jagai Mata and Chaitanya Charitamrita and Ajamil in Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, like that. That's why they're there. You know, we have to see is that no, Krishna consciousness and chanting the holy name, bhakti, is more powerful than anything material. Doesn't matter what it is. So if we have attachment to the material, then we'll think it's very big. You know, or if it's just a reason to express enviousness, then yes, then it can be, then it's an outlet for that. And so we'll concentrate on that. But if it's a matter of you want to move forward in Krishna consciousness, then there's no need of these things. Where it's useful, you use it. Where it's not, just like when you go into the kitchen, you use the pan when you need it. It's not that you walk around the temple all day with a pan in your hand. You know, like that. You know, it's that, you know, you use it, and when it's done, you put it down. You know, it's washed, it's put away. And then next time it's needed, then it's gotten out. So whenever these kind of analytical things are necessary, you do. But if you always are always thinking about that and always, then that would be a problem like that. So that we want to avoid. Yes? No?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Anything else on this? Maharaj, any point? No? He must be Atmarama, because he's always just sitting there smiling with the transcendental realm behind him and all that. Okay. Okay, how are we doing on the time? Okay, so then I think I go on to the next verse, Raghunathji.
It means in text number 15. Yat anudyasina yuktaha karma kranti pandanam chindantiko vidastasya kona kurya kataratim. With sword in hand, intelligent man, out through the biting knots of the reactionary work, karma, by remembering the personality of karma. Therefore, who will not pay attention to this message? The contact of the spiritual spark with material elements creates a knot, which must be cut if one wants to be liberated from the actions and reactions of creative work. Liberation means freedom from the cycle of reactionary work. This liberation automatically follows for one who constantly remembers transcendental pastimes of the personality of Godhead. This is because all the activities of Supreme Lord, His Leela, and transcendental to the modes of the material energy. They are all attractive spiritual activities, and therefore constant association with the spiritual activities of the Supreme Lord gradually spiritualize the conditioned soul and ultimately serves severs the knot of material bondage. Liberation from the material bondage is therefore a byproduct of devotional service. Attainment of spiritual knowledge is not sufficient to ensure liberation. Such a knowledge must be overcoated with devotional service so that ultimately the devotional service alone predominates. Then liberation is made possible. Even the reactionary work of the fruitive workers can lead one to liberation when it is overcoated with the devotional service. Karma, overcoated with the devotional service, is called karma yoga. Similarly, empirical knowledge, overcoated with the devotional service, is called jnana yoga. But the pure bhakti is independent of such karma and jnana because it alone cannot fully endow one with liberation from conditional life, but also award one the transcendent loving service of the Lord. Therefore, any sensible man who is above the average man with a poor fount of knowledge must constantly remember the personality of Godhead by hearing about him, by glorifying him, by remembering him, and by worshiping him always without cessation. That is the perfect way of devotional service. The Goswamis of Vrindavana, who were authorized by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to preach the bhakti cult, readily followed this rule and made immense literatures of transcendental science for our benefit. They have chalked out way for all classes of men in terms of the different castes and orders of life, in prescience of the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam and similar other authoritative scriptures.
Yes, so the, you know, it's being pointed out here is that the devotional service, that's the only thing that actually can bring you beyond the material condition. That even the path of jnana, they're intelligent enough to see, you know, beyond what the common person is doing, simply engaged in fruit of work. And they see that to try to go beyond that, get beyond these reactions, then, you know, there's a temporary cessation of their involvement. You know, it's just like you take a ball, you throw it up in the air. You know, it's not where you are for some time, but it falls back. Right? So they just go to a particular distance and then come back. But here it's talking about that by devotional service, then these knots of material attachment are cut. Because the point here is why they mention about cutting, because that's the only way it works. You can't unravel these knots. Because one knot's connected to another knot connected to another. So as soon as you start pulling on one, it's going, no, it's only by cutting. Because you have to give it up. Because it's not that, oh, we'll just make some adjustments and then it'll be all right. It's a matter of, no, it needs to be given up. So devotional service automatically does that. If you have something, let's say you have a house, you like your house, you know, so there's some attachment to it. You take care of the house, you do everything for the house. But so that's an entanglement. That's going to entangle you. The house itself, the land, the furnitures, the people in the house, the activities of the house, you know, any other things that may come, some social status from the house, like what neighborhood it is or what kind of house it is or what it's made out of or any of these kind of things can all create these knots. So then so that's karma. Jnana then tries to go, this is all nonsense, this is all maya. And then they try to just give up each one of those. So all those things are all together. That's why then they'll leave home, go to the forest, you know, all that kind of thing. And so they'll get some success, but it's very hard work. It's very hard work, the karma, very hard work, the jnana. But in bhakti, then this liberation is a side effect, as Prabhupada mentions, because now you take the house, use it for Krishna. The furniture, use it for Krishna. The grounds are for Krishna. Anything that, any other benefits that's there, whoever's in the house, they're engaged in the service of Krishna. So you're automatically not doing fruit of work. It's spiritual, you know, and you cut these knots rather than trying to just, you know, walk out on them, ignore them or things like that. So it automatically, these come as a side effect. So that's why the devotee doesn't worry about that. You see, he may say, I want to give up all material desire and only be absorbed in you, like Prahlad Maharaj is pointing out. Because someone may say, but he's trying to get rid of all material desire, so he's interested in liberation. How can you call Prahlad Maharaj an Akinchana Bhakta? You know, but he wants to not be absorbed in the material world and be absorbed in Krishna. That's Akinchana. It's just on the Lord. Right? So we have to see, is it's not about, oh, all these material desires bother me. When will I give up these material desires? That's looking at material desires are bad. I want to give them up. That's good. No, but you have to see it in connection with Krishna. I want to be absorbed in Krishna. These desires are getting in the way of that. I want to give them up so I can be absorbed in Krishna. That's pure devotional service. So it looks very similar. Why would it look similar? Because we're always going, well, devotional service looks similar to what we're doing materially. But actually, if you think about it, where's the original and where's the reflection? So the spiritual, so material world looks a bit like the spiritual world. But in the spiritual world, everything's engaged in Krishna service. Here, that's where the perversion comes. It's the same thing. But there, the original is all used in Krishna's service. Here, the reflection is used in our service. That's the perversion. So the first reflection, you see, looks the same. Then you get what's distortion. Then instead of it being done, you know, in a natural way that the scriptures say, now we start to get into, you know, all combination of the modes and then come up with weirdo stuff. You know. Like that, you know, like the natural form is you're riding on a bullock cart or on a chariot, you know, or, you know, on a horse like that. But then, you know, you have the thing of a vehicle, but then, you know, it starts taking on all kinds of other shapes and forms and everything like that, you know, giving so much problem, right? Like that. So cutting the knots means in other words, you're aware, but it's not that you're aware that it has to be given up. You're willing to give it up. And in devotional service, opportunity will always come up that you can give it up. Right? Attachment thinking, this is my house. Then there's always the opportunity that comes up. But you're always saying, this is Krishna's house, so it's used for Krishna. How would Krishna like the kitchen to be used, or how would he like, you know, the backyard to be used, or, you know, everything like that. So then we're thinking like that, and then automatically it's not ours. We're still using it in that. Jnana means, oh, you have to give up the house, walk out, have nothing to do with it, because that's the only way they can deal with the knots, right? But the devotional service cuts through these knots, because then they don't exist anymore. That's why devotional service is actually harder to understand, because the devotee looks like doing things like a karmi, but when you talk to them, they can talk all these things like the jnani. But at the same time, as neither of these positions are what they're actually talking about. They're talking about bhakti. So it becomes very confusing, because some will think, oh, the nice sentiment and the ecstasy is devotional. That's the bhakti, and any jnana or karma, that's bogus. You know, and so like this is that you end up with all these inappropriate understandings. So that's why I said the devotional service is in the middle. One side's the sahajiyas, one side's the impersonalists, the smartest. So like that, we have to see is that the devotional service is the really real thing, right? So anything we say here is, you know, practical stuff like, you know, niti or artha, dharma, these kind of things are practical because they're based on the laws of nature. But the point is those laws are coming from Krishna. They're doing things in that way because that's how Krishna likes them to be done. And so that's why we follow. We don't follow because it's the rule, this and that. We follow because it pleases Krishna. In the beginning, we know it pleases Krishna, but for us, it's a rule. So we follow the rule. But ultimately, we're following that rule to please Krishna. It may not be as direct, but, you know, so that's the advantage of direct activities of devotional service, that even though our consciousness may not be direct, the activity is. And so we get the maximum benefit. Then when you're having indirect activities and we're dealing with them indirectly, then it'll be a little slower because that's where renunciation comes in. So in other words, the first position is sannyas. It's Krishna's, it's for Krishna, right? And then the second is it's mine and it's for Krishna, right? So that comes, but in any case, Krishna is pointing out that if you want to start the process, start from there. Who's it for? What's your intent? Right? And then you can get into all the technical details of how exactly you perform the activity, what's the situation, how to do, what are all the little fine details of the laws and all that. But you start, if you get that correct, everything else will fall in line. You know, just like if you cook and you wanted to have a very nice preparation, you cooked it as good as you can. You know, so you've gotten a nice preparation. Now you offer it to Krishna, then that means all the intelligence you use to cook nicely, get the ingredients, use the different techniques, you know, think about it in so many ways, all that becomes connected to Krishna. All that becomes purified. So that's the point why you start there with intent. Because if the intent is correct, everything else will come in line. And then as one starts to, you know, develop in Krishna consciousness, then one can analyze the correctness of the action you're doing, the correctness of the situation, how you're dealing. But the point is you can't forget the intent, how it's for Krishna. Otherwise, we just may get into, oh, this is wrong, this situation is wrong, this, that. But why? Because of its relationship to Krishna. So if we forget that, that's then getting too much. Then we're looking at good and bad. But actually, it's not about good and bad. It's about if it pleases Krishna, that's what it's about. You can say, well, this will never please Krishna. And then, but why? Why doesn't it please Krishna? You may be correct. You may never, but you're not thinking about it because it never pleases Krishna. You're thinking about it because it's wrong. It's got to be, this doesn't please Krishna, so I won't do that. No, this is wrong, and anybody does it wrong, and this and that going on and on. But the point is it's, so what are you doing that's right then? How is what you're doing service? You've already analyzed it, figured out that it's wrong. So now do what's right. Right? Because so fault fighting isn't specifically a devotional activity. Right? It may be part of the process of hearing, chanting, and remembering about the Lord, you know, or worshiping the Lord. You see what's correct and what's not. And you see that you're chanting nicely, glorifying, you know, hearing nicely, remembering nicely, worshiping nicely. But it, on itself, it's not. It's a tool. But if you focus on that, and just because I do, that's like you're saying before, always walking around with the frying pan and all that. And, you know, and I use the frying pan and like that. And it's out of balance. It's not natural. It's not, that's not part of human culture. Right? Is that how we're doing in time? Okay, still. Okay, is that good? Is there any questions on this or anything? No? Any comments? No? Okay, so then we have a few minutes. We may start the next. The next verse, but only read, you know, enough for a point to be there if it's a bigger part.
That means the verse number 16. शुश्रूषदधानस्य वासुदेवकर्तारुचिः स्यान् महत्सेवय विप्रा पुण्यकीर्तनिषेवना. O twice-born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudeva. The confidential life of living being is caused by his revolting against the Lord. There are men called Deva, or godly living beings, and there are men called asuras or demons who are against the authority of the Supreme Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, 16th chapter, a wide description of the asuras is given, which is said that the asuras are put in lower and lower states of ignorance, life after life, and so sink to the lower animal forms and have no information of the absolute truth. These asuras are gradually rectified to God consciousness by the mercy of the Lord's liberated servitors in different countries according to the supreme will.
Such according to the
Supreme will.
Oh, okay.
Such devotees of God are very confidential associates of the Lord, and when they come to save human society from the dangers of godliness, they are known as the powerful incarnations of the Lord, as sons of the Lord, as servants of the Lord, or as associates of the Lord. But none of them falsely claim to be God themselves. This is a blasphemy declared by the asuras, and the demoniac followers of such asuras also accept pretenders as God or his incarnation. In the revealed scripture, there is defined information of the incarnation of God. No one should be accepted as God or an incarnation of God unless he is confirmed by the revealed scripture. It is one paragraph.
Okay, yes. So, yeah. So then here's that the divine mentality then is, you know, favorable towards God. You know, they might still be quite materialistic or fruit of workers or things like that, but they're theistic. They're willing to acknowledge this God and God's laws, and they'll follow them because it pleases God. Though they may be, you know, most of the time wanting to please God, that their material life will go nicely. Or they may be, you know, more nicely situated where they're seriously trying to move forward in Krishna consciousness like this, or they may be already situated on a nice advanced platform. You know, in any case, these are the godly. Then the asuric means that they're not interested in God, or even at the point they're opposed to God, that he's not important in this. And so they don't follow the laws that they follow are not because they're God's laws. They just see that these are mechanistic laws of the world and that they work, but they don't attribute if there's laws as a lawmaker. They just see that they're here and they only worry about how we as individuals, as humans, have understood and use these laws for their own benefit, like that. So such persons, as Prabhupada points out, they just go down, down, down until they get into the animal species and all this and that, you know, come up. And wherever they may be, then as Prabhupada points out, then the Lord, by his arrangement, he's sending devotees to go and preach to all these persons, you know, and like you said, that, you know, they're known as sons of God or incarnations of God or, you know, some different elements like that. And they're very confidential servants of the Lord. And they're trying to uplift those people who have come into, you know, in one in general, but also then in this context, he was in relationship to those who are not interested in God, to bring them to God consciousness. So then we see is that outside that circle of the innocent, that they're going and trying to catch however much they can from beyond that, wherever it may be. So then you have, yeah. And so then but they themselves, you see, they never claim that they are God. They represent God. You know, they may be an incarnation, like I think it's Prithu Maharaj. He's a Shaktivesh, so being a Jiva, he knows he's representing God. So he's an incarnation of God, but he's not Krishna himself. But he's representing, so on behalf of Krishna, then he's accepting that particular appreciation or prayers or different things that are there, but he knows that it's actually Krishna, right? And so that's what is meant by these confidential servants. While you see someone like Indra, he's also representing the Lord, but he gets distracted because he's not so advanced. And so then he starts to think that he's actually himself important. And so then we have Krishna arranges for that Govardhan pastime or these other pastimes where, you know, he ends up in a compromised position because of his pride, right? And then it has to be corrected, and then things go back to normal, and he goes back to his position, and everything goes on in the universe. But we see that those who are going out and taking the position like that of sons of God, incarnations of God, representatives of God, then the aspect is that the more they're properly situated on the Madhyama, the Uttama platform, then the better it works. They don't get distracted so easily like that. And so, yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then you can see is that that's what's going on in the world. So there's always someone going out preaching, trying to do something nicely to bring people more towards God consciousness and that. But you see, it doesn't always go so well for them. You know, some degree is there, you don't hear so much what happened with, your Western religions and all that, but as you go down in time where you have more detail, historical detail, you see, they get a lot of trouble like that because people are interested in their materialistic way. And so they don't like being told that that's not the way. So that's why then it's special that they do these things. You know, they're respected for what they do and all that, because they're trying to bring people to the point of appreciating and understanding God consciousness. Yeah. Okay. That went. Any questions on this or any comments? No? Okay, so then maybe read a little bit more. There is that, you know, in other words, something short that we can, so we only have, I think, 8 minutes.
The servants of God are to be respected as God by the devotees who actually want to go back to Godhead. Such servants of God are called Mahatmas or Tirthas, and they preach according to particular time and place. The servants of God urge people to become devotees to the Lord. They never tolerate being called God. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was God himself, according to the indication of the revealed scriptures, but he played the part of a devotee. People who knew him to be God addressed him as God, but he used to block his ears with his hands and chant the name of Lord Vishnu. He strongly protested against being called God, although undoubtedly he was God himself. The Lord behaved so to warn us against unscrupulous men who take pleasure in being addressed as God.
Yeah, so here we see is that position of seeing the devotee and seeing the representative is non-different from God. They're representative of God, at the same time they're non-different from God. So you see, is this solves the problem? I mean, they have a 2,000-year-old, well, it's probably more now, 2,000, No. Yeah, no, this is still 2000. It's 21st century, but it's still 2000. So 2000 year old problem on, is the preacher, is he son of God or is he God himself? So some will say he's son of God. Some will say he's both son and God and this and that. And, so like this, it creates many divisions, you could say, in the community of those who are, trying to be God conscious. And in this way, different branches of the, same religious process have sprung up. And each one will think the other's wrong. But here, as Prabhupada's pointing out, the representative of God must be seen as non-different from God, because representing means you get the same principle. It's just probably gives the example of like the viceroy or the ambassador that for the, or the minister for the country, or even the president of the country, when they come to another place, when they come, dealing with that person is as good as dealing with that country. You offend that person, you offend that country. Right? So because they've been sent as representative, therefore then God is seeing how you're dealing with his representative. And accordingly, then God's reciprocating with you. So both those things are correct, but you have to see is that they're devotees. They're not God, but they represent God. They're an incarnation of God. So they're as good as, but it doesn't mean that they are God. Just if, like somebody comes and says, okay, I've been sent that, the country says this, you do like this, or it'll work, and not, and you accept or don't accept. You can say, well, you're just saying that. No, but the country has sent him to say that. And so therefore you follow what he says, or acknowledge what has been said, you get the benefit of what is, the power of that country. So that's the whole point, is that, if you're not connected nicely with the philosophy and with those aspects, it's not being analyzed, in a proper way, one can very sentimentally, so then, one will say, oh, he is God, directly. We even had, that came up in the, I think it was 1970. Some devotees started to think that Prabhupada is God. And, he had gone to India because he comes to, would come to the West and then go back and spend some time in India. Right? So he'd go back and forth. So because I think that may have been one of the earlier ones where he had gone. And so then some devotees started thinking is that he left because we didn't understand he's God. And so he became offended and left. And yeah, I think it was just one of the senior devotees, I think it's Satsarup Maharaj, being a BBT editor and all that, he would read the books nicely so he could defeat them in the philosophy. But other than that, no one else knew what to say because they didn't read so much. And so Prabhupada was not impressed, with these guys' idea of this, because it's Mayavad. He says, no, the spiritual master is as good as, but he never is God. So that kind of aspect is, if you get too sentimental, then you'll get distracted by these things and come up with these philosophies and like that. Does that make sense? Or he's the spiritual master, he's the king, the greatest of all, so he's the king, so then he should wear a crown and this and that. And no, that's not how it works. Like that. It's just that there's a process for what the representative does, and there's a way to do to, that one respects that, and in that way one then and worships the Lord. And so then it's always done according to what Guru Sadhu and Shastra says. We can't make up our own idea. Otherwise, then that's how you see is so many monotheistic or Vaishnav religions in the world, but unfortunately it's basically there's it's very little philosophy, practically no philosophy, and so basically it's either sentiment or fanaticism, and so they don't get, and so they're working on the neophyte platform, the Prakrit platform, and they can't get along, simply because they don't understand this point that's being made here. Yes, Raghunathji.
Maharaj, in the way, for example, the Vaishnavas are calling to others like the Prabhu, it means that they start to understand that I am the lower than the others. And also there is the knowledge that the jiva is the small particle part of the Krishna. And then, for example, the Mayavadis start to try to understand that everybody is God, you know. Then how to be between this, you know, because to know that everybody is higher than me, it means something like the Uttama Adhikari platform, you know, because you also understand the Madhyama means that you are selecting. Then how to apply, don't be at the side of the Mayavadis that we are everybody God, and also how to use this position of Madhyama or Kanishtha Adhikari in this understanding of Brahma.
That means being part and parcel. Like Prabhupada gives the example of like the hand; it's part of the body. You know, you'll say, you know, it means that I touch the hand, and I say, "Don't touch me." You know, or I touched him; I touched his hand. But the hand is part and parcel, and that's how you touch. But at the same time, the hand isn't the whole body, and so that's why it serves the body. Right, and so it's just so the Mayavadis thing is just they want to be God. That's all, because they're maintaining the problem of the Mayavad philosophy, you know, or any non-Vaishnava philosophy is they're maintaining that I'm the controller and enjoyer. You know, even a neophyte devotee has a tendency towards that, though he knows technically it's wrong. But you know, in its subtler forms, then he may be distracted and not notice. But the Mayavadis, then it's no, we're all God, because they want to be God. You know, I couldn't be successful in the material world and enjoy, so now I'll become God. You know, that's like saying, I couldn't be successful running my small business, so now I'm going to be a multinational, you know, billionaire. How does that work? You couldn't even make your shop work. How are you going to be a, you know, so it's just they say I am, you know, and so... And each other, they call each other, you know, they pat each other on the back and call each other Narayan, like that. But it's a fool's paradise there, you know. And the point is we're servant, but the point is everybody's servant. And so you're just always seeing that they're all nicely, because we know ourselves and know, you know, where we could do better and everything like that. So we're looking at others without fault finding. So we're just seeing they're engaged in Krishna's service. So that's perfect. You know, that's all. So it's simple. So that's the point, is that worshiping the Supreme Lord, making friendship with the devotees, being kind to the, you know, compassionate to the innocent, and avoiding those who are inimical. And so the neophyte does that as a platform, because he's not on that platform, but at least that's a measurement by which he can tell what to do. And the Uttama functions on that platform, that way he can preach. You know, otherwise he'll just sit and do his own bhajan and things like that, because he won't distinguish like that. And so then, you know, it's like you had Haridas Thakur sitting in the cave, and there's a huge python in the cage, and some other devotee came inside, freaked out with the python being there. How can you be there? It's so dangerous, this, that. But his point was, is, you know, he's the soul, and super souls in my heart and in his heart. And so Krishna wants, you know, in the form of the python to give me trouble, he will. And if he doesn't, he won't. So Haridas Thakur was just sitting there chanting. And yeah, but now he won't be able to preach in that cave, because no one else will be able to come in. So then, seeing that the other devotees have disturbed, then later that python left. You know, so Krishna in his heart just inspired him to go. That way other devotees could come and see Haridas Thakur and things like that. So, you know, you get that they may do things that we don't. Like Prahlad Maharaj is sitting there in school preaching to the sons of the demons. He's not worried what will happen to him. That father, he knows his father's a demon. But at the same time, as you know, they're all part and parcels of Krishna. So maybe if you talk about Krishna, they might be benefited. That's why you sometimes see this theories coming up, you know, about how people are, you know, that join the movement, you know, even at the time when Prabhupada was here and things like that, that were not interested in devotional service. They actually came in because of some ulterior motive. Either they were sent by some kind of government agency, or you know, they were just seeing how what they could get and this and that. But Prabhupada's looking at it. They're chanting, they're taking prasad, they're taking part in the program, going to Mangalarti, they're going to be benefited. And so at some point, they could just decide to surrender. And, we don't know, these are just theories that people have that there might be something like that. But at the same time, they don't know that of all those people, how many actually became devotees that surrendered. Or some who didn't and did whatever they're supposed to do and left. So the whole point is that Prabhupada's seeing is that they're benefiting. It doesn't matter who it is. If they're chanting Hare Krishna and taking prasad, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, what's the fault? They could be purified and they may give up that mundane consciousness. Like that. While we're looking at it, no, they shouldn't be given a chance. So that's the whole point. It's a matter of, you're seeing if there's a possibility there, then that chance is given. Because no one can say that they were. It's only theories of why is things going wrong, so you have to come up with some theory. But the point is that the point that you see the Uttama, they can do that. And as long as they're following and doing nicely, because he would have this, there'd be the standard. If they're going to be there, they have to follow the standards. And so they're going to benefit. So even if they didn't take it so seriously, that credit's there. And in future time, either this life or another life, then, they can continue where they left off. Is that okay? We're good?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yeah. The time is up. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai.
Jai.